Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Motivenda Melchizedek. She is an artist, metaphysician, astrologer, and glass artist, and also a writer. And what we're mainly going to discuss in the program is her recently released book, The Edge of the World, which includes her art and her true life story. Welcome to the program, Motty.
Thank you.
What I'd firstly like to ask you, is Melchizedek your actual name?
I changed my name probably about 20 years ago, and it's sort of a long, complicated story, but that has to do with really the work I'm doing in this life, and so...
I thought it might, because it's very well known in, shall we say, spiritualist circles, or
yes.
Spiritual circles, yes. So
yes.
I thought that wasn't probably without coincidence.
Yes.
Right, now, when did your book come out, by the way?
About a year and a half ago, yes.
Right.
And a lot of the material, in that book is work that I wrote throughout a process that I went through that lasted a long period of time. And that piece I published about a year and a half ago.
Right. So is that your one and only book?
No, I'm in the process of publishing a couple other books right now that also go... The Edge of the World is the title of the book that you're referring to. It's called The Edge of the World, The Metaphysics of Survival and the Evolution of Humanity. And what for me, when I did my emotional integration work years ago, I happened to chronicle and record my process through writing and illustrations. And because I'm also a metaphysician, what I'm doing now is taking that work from that period of time and presenting it through the lens of metaphysics and how, to me, those two things correlate, the work of personal emotional, what I call emotional... Sorry, that was my giant dog knocking over my painting.
I thought you'd fallen over there.
Sorry. Yeah, I have a dog who weighs about 120 pounds. He's walking through my studio, which right now is filled with artwork.
Right, now, the book was really the result of your earlier childhood experiences, I guess.
Yes.
And the way you've obviously, as you've grown up, you've overcome the emotional trauma. And I wouldn't want you to go into any great detail, but how long were you abused, and what did you think that, at that time as a child?
Well, it's interesting for me because I have kind of, to me, it's like a multi-layered or multi-level process in this life. On one level... I always knew from the time I was a baby, you know, what I was doing metaphysically in this world. And so I sort of on one level I knew just to survive my circumstances. And to me the way I look at my childhood is that it as traumatizing and devastating as my personal experiences were, they seem to be very common in this day and age, that most of the people I know were very they were dismantled as children by their own parents to varying degrees and varying ways. In my circumstances, I was born into a large family, and I have six sisters, and we all went through a lot of abuse as children, and it covered the full spectrum from emotional to physical to sexual abuse. And during those years, I basically, in the core of my soul, I could never accept that as my fate, a world where that would take place and where that was my destiny and I was supposed to accept this and continue on with this legacy. And so always through my childhood, from the earliest time until I was old enough to get out of there, I had sort of a tentative relationship to that world, to that family, and I always knew the second I could escape there, I would. So on the most basic level, I always knew that I was here to dwell in, to inhabit, and to co-create a world where this stuff was not accepted or cultivated or brought forward.
Right. So how old were you, in fact, when you got out of it?
Actually, I was really, by the time I actually broke out of that family system, I was 19, because I was already in college then. My family was, you know, one of the ways that they concealed the devastating things that were going on in there was to create an outpicturing of a very healthy family. And so we all went to college, and like all of my sisters are to this day, you know, very well educated and successful on the societal levels. So there was, you know, really no trace of abuse that you could look at when you just looked at us from the outside. And so that was really, it was during college that I finally just stood my ground and said, you know I'm in college so that I can prove to the world that you never did this to us. And so I broke out at that point and left. I was living on the East Coast of the U.S. and left and went out to California and pursued being an artist. But it was during that time that I sort of bottomed out. I drank and became an alcoholic and all these things to cope with that state of self-alienation and to be able to survive the devastation without consciously processing it. And so a number of years into being out in California and escaping sort of the grip that they had on me, I began to break free and process my wounds. And that was about 25 years ago.
Right. Now the emotional damage must be quite strong and very difficult to get rid of. When did you actually start, as I guess you did, to seek outside help that was actually putting you on the path to being healed?
At that time for me, what I did was I kind of bottomed out through drinking. And see, for me it was interesting, I'd say, with the difference between me and my siblings is that I was never able to create a life that looked like I was together when I wasn't. You know what I'm saying? And so I always drank, smoked, and did everything to, I don't know, to kind of keep in some way the truth alive about my devastated state. And so when I was 23, I ended up just bottoming out through alcoholism and went into AA at that time. And as I began that process of getting sober, that's when my memories began to come back. And there was just no way to be sober and to be in denial and remain self-alienated. And so as I began that process of just existing conscious inside of my own life without pushing myself away, that was the beginning of this process. And I've never moved from there. You know, I feel like I get deeper and deeper and deeper into my life every minute of every day from that point forward. And it did take maybe when I was a couple of years into being totally clean from any mind-altering stuff, I entered into therapy and started a more, focused process of doing integration work and work with a therapist. But I also accessed through many years all types of alternative healing, from astrology to soul retrieval work to, groups of recovery people and art and creativity and writing were always part of it, which is how I created this particular body of work. It was a big part of my healing process, was to just access tools that were natural to me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Did you find other people who had similar experiences helped you to overcome your own?
Absolutely. In the very beginning, I was kind of part of, I would say, that original group of people in this country who processed those wounds. Back about 25 years ago at that time, it was really not even a concept on the collective level that we could be affected by those family systems and those devastating environments. At that time, on the collective level here, it was like nobody talked about those childhood things. And you were supposed to endure like physical beatings and humiliation and being just annihilated by your own parents. And that was considered normal. And so at that time, I was sort of part of the cutting edge of the very first groups of people who began to process these things and say to ourselves, hey, we were devastated. And I mean, I remember even in AA during those years when I was into that for sobriety, you know, people would say, oh, you're just a broken drunk and you're just lucky to be sober and that's the end of the story. And the longer I was sober, it's like, wait a minute, you know, I drank because I was injured as a child and devastated. And that's how I coped with that. And I began to kind of place these things where they belong. Do you know what I'm saying? And separate out what had happened to me versus who I am. Because I consider myself an absolutely whole and healthy being, and I came into this world in that state. And I did experience devastating injuries at the hands of my own parents and then at the hands of this larger consensus society. But as I've healed, and this is where I exist in other people's realities for the most part all the time, is as a mirror to them that they are healthy, that, you know, I was always healthy. And what's confusing in this culture is that when you begin to separate out and set boundaries and not participate with these energies, you're considered an extremist or you're considered, I mean, I literally had to go away from my entire family in order to exist in health and consciousness in this life. And to be whole and healthy and to honor my own health was to betray my own mother and father. And these are very heavy-duty dynamics that I find people having to contend with all throughout my world. And so, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah. Now, when you were going through these experiences at home and with your sisters, were you led to believe that that was quite normal? And did you think that that was how every family lived?
You know, it's interesting, Michael, because on one level, it's like I think what I had going for me is that I've always been aware of my past lives, and I'm very aware of what I'm doing in this world and why I'm here from an oversoul level. And so on some level, I knew I was having to pass through something, but I also think I knew that this was pretty pervasive, because it is. I mean, that's been what is the most shocking thing for me, that after I did my integration work in those early years, that I found myself healthy inside of a world that doesn't even acknowledge the pervasiveness of these wound structures. And so, but as a child, I think I always had, and I remember I was talking to a friend about this recently, I remember being like really, really young, maybe 3, 4, up to maybe 6 or 7 years old, and I used to go around to everyone in my family, and I would always hold my finger right above, like right in between their eyes, a little bit off of their face, trying to activate their third eye. And I know it because I knew that was my only salvation, that the only way I was ever going to survive in this world is if I could awaken the people around me to become conscious. Yeah.
Now, you said, I believe, that you remembered past lives. Do you have some link that makes you understand why you had to come into this life to experience what you did?
Oh, absolutely. You know, because for me, the body of work, back to the Melchizedek Order question that you posed in the beginning, my work in this life, and to me, as a metaphysician, I mean, I'm also a woman and a human being and all these other things, but on the larger metaphysical, over larger macrocosmic view, I went through this for one reason only, which was to have a language to speak to the pressing issues of the day in relationship to the process of ascension and embodying our own divinity here, because these are the things that people have to face in one form or another. How do I exist in my totality? And to me, even though we speak about ascension, it's really about descending and embodying ourselves here. And there is no way to exist, from my point of view, in higher consciousness and be separated from ourselves at the same time. And this experience for me was about being forced apart from myself, being forced to swallow ideas and perceptions that were not my own, and to say it's okay if you do these things to me because you're making me say it's okay. And yes. And as we go through these dismantling processes as children, we become separated from ourselves, self-alienated, and when we're moving through life separated from ourselves, we cannot exist, we cannot embody ourselves. They're mutually exclusive. And so I totally get. And that has been, I think, for me as a woman, and even like on the inner child level, that's been one of the the things I have suffered around through the years, although now I feel like I'm way over on the other side of this thing, but being misunderstood for having had that experience, it's like, why would I go through that? Well, I can't think of any more valuable path to have taken in this life than to have survived those conditions and come out totally whole and impeccable in my center and fully conscious. I mean, to me, ascension isn't about going anywhere else. It's about being able to have our eyes wide open and consciously stay on the side of reality and to acknowledge what's going on in this world so that we can exist here enough to transmute it by embodying our own divinity right here in the midst of all of this. And so I've always been aware of that from a soul level, what I'm doing. It's purely to have a language to speak to the pressing issues of the day, because I could sit away in the Himalayas and talk about ascension, but could I be born into a typical family in this world and survive and deal with it and go through everything I had to come home to myself, to even have the opportunity to embody myself in this very world? Because I don't feel like I have anything to say to anybody if I couldn't make that journey myself.
Yeah. But you were clearly born with the inner strength to cope with this.
Yeah.
Again, just getting back to like the childhood period, did you ever get to a stage, which I've heard other people comment on, where you thought that everything was your fault and you felt that you should be punished for it?
Oh, that's a very profound question you asked, but definitely. And one of the things that I think, and one of the ways that I have noticed this, definitely, I think what happens, it's a very, very natural thing to do as a child. And I have thought about that. Luckily, fortunately, I've never been raped as an adult woman, but, you know, that's a very common thing that happens when women are raped. Or anybody probably is a victim of a violent crime in adulthood, especially when you think of rape, and it illustrates this thing that you're mentioning here, which is that a woman will feel dirty and she'll feel disgusting, like somehow she deserved it. And I think that happens because the perpetrators are not taking any responsibility for their transgressions. And as innocent children, we're watching these, and I think it's very common as a child, if your mother and father are really that self-alienated themselves and that wounded, that they're doing these things to you, it's almost easier to think that somehow I deserve that, okay?
Yes.
Otherwise, my parents are completely crazy, okay? You know, it's like, so as a child, because they're not accepting any responsibility, and like my parents, in a way, were very innocent. I mean, they were victims of this ancestral legacy of devastating energies. And they were just, you know, a generation before me, before these were even concepts, let alone could anybody heal from any of this stuff and not pass it on to their own children. And I even watched with my siblings, they did not, I was born with a much stronger sense of self than they are, because they've all gone ahead and had a generation of children now. You know, they
yes.
didn't stop it. I was like, no way am I going to bring a child into this lineage. And so, but it is very, 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 very common. And the people I know who I love so much in my life who have come out of these histories, which it's everywhere, they all face that very lonely journey of having absorbed this sense that it's them. And they carry that, and I think that's how we experience the wound until one. And I was sharing some of my work with some friends recently, and I always kind of joke because my work is so intense, and people, especially men, will say, "Oh God, you shouldn't tell anybody about this." You know what I'm saying? It's like, and I say, because they want to protect me, and I say, "Well, look, you know, I'm not ashamed because I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, this was done to me, and I do want to share this work with other people to empower and mirror them and let them know that they're beautiful too. And just because people did this to them, certainly as an innocent child, anybody, a grown up who's a victim of somebody else's crime is not to blame for that crime." And it's a process now where we must, I do feel like we're moving into a very pivotal time collectively where the responsibility needs to be placed back where it belongs. You know, this is my father's shame, my mother's shame, and then it's really their parents all the way back to the beginning. And I've noticed with people, the people who I really love, and they're such extraordinary people, compassionate and divine, and they have just absorbed this legacy and carried, because they don't want to put any more pressure on, say, their mother or their father, who they feel compassion for. And so they're like, well, I'll just spend the rest of my life feeling like I'm a piece of crap, rather than say, look, you did this to me and it really hurt me and it was wrong, and putting it where it needs to go for this thing to shift back out of our ancestral lines.
Yes. I would imagine that the emotional damage at some point makes it very difficult for people, maybe even yourself, to have an intimate relationship with someone else.
Yeah, I think that that is a process, that when you're wounded and you haven't dealt with it, physical sexual intimacy is an incredibly terrifying terrain to move into, because you're revisiting a place where you're going to be activated in ways that remind and trigger of these memories. And if you're not allowed to know what happened to you, okay, then you can't let yourself go there. But when you do heal, and I've completely healed, you can be absolutely whole and healthy and have the most exquisite intimate dynamics with people. But when you're separated, and this was true for me, and that's why I drank. I mean, I would have to be drunk to be intimate with people before, in those years before I dealt with anything, because to go into sexual experiences was to remember what happened to me.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's very, very common. And a lot of times people will split off. Like I was talking to a friend of mine about this man that she totally loves, who was wounded in his childhood, and they had been together years ago, and she talked about how he would, like, completely dissociate during sex. And she said sometimes it would feel like she was just there with almost like a doll or something. And I said, I totally identify with that, because I used to do that too, because you're very afraid. Basically, you're afraid to remember what happened.
Yes.
But you can absolutely heal that stuff and become completely embodied and totally alive and sexual and centered again. I know this from my own experience.
Do you have a happy partnership now?
Yes, I do.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So you proved the point to yourself then over the years.
Yes,
you can
cope
with it.
Yeah, for me it was more like, it's complex, because on one level, back to that original concept I was saying, even with my own family system, I think people are floundering all around us all the time, trying to create an external life that looks together when they're not. Very few people have healed these wounds, because there hasn't been the real space to do it, even though everyone acts like they've done this, because the dialogue's out there. But very few people have made that journey, and I know through the years, it was stages for me. Like, I remember learning to belly dance was one, where I reclaimed my erotic self. I used to be very afraid to even be womanly and to move through the world and embody my feminine energy on those levels. It felt like I was asking to be raped. And this was an unconscious thought in me. Okay. So through the years, I entered in, kind of like I did with art. I was terrified, even though I'm a total primordial artist, I was very frightened of ever drawing, because I was going to be bringing my energy into this world and existing in my power here, and it meant annihilation to me. And so I had similar things with my sexuality and with feeling like I could move through this world and be exotic and be beautiful, and I could move and dance and enjoy that. And there were years before I did my integration work where I was not balanced, and I, you know, would want men to just be attracted to me all the time. You know what I'm saying? You can do that dysfunctional stuff. It's very, it's like when you come out of these forms of abuse and you're not consciously on the table dealing with this, you do very covert things. Like, I wasn't happy unless everybody in the room wanted to have sex with me. Not that I would have sex with them, but I'm talking about an energetic dynamic. of wanting people to be attracted to me. And that's not really who I am. I mean, I'm very, very highly conscious on the levels of energy, including sexual energy. And I came into this life like almost a very higher ordered person about the power of sexual energy. And this is who I am. And this is who's sitting right here with you now is the same child that was born in this level of clarity, but through that abuse, I got a little lost, and I didn't, until I got my center back, I might want, you know, people, like now if a man's attracted to me who I know I'm not interested in, I would never, and for years I've sat in this seat, would I ever cultivate that or titillate them or want them to be under a spell of energy with me? So there's all this moving back into my, I've been out of my center from that abuse, but I've been back in my center for a very long time.
So you never had a period of time where you perhaps blamed men and hated men?
You know, I didn't. For some reason, I love men. I always have.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I know that that's a phenomenon that happens a lot with abuse on both sides. It's more, I think, like, because I was lucky that, I mean, I was kind of first in line. Like, I'm here to do the healing. The second the opening came in this society to address these things, I was there, you know, because, and so I didn't perpetuate years in my adulthood. I mean, basically, I was devastated, then I was basically an alcoholic and I acted out, and I was pretty much just split off from myself and my sexuality and my life and acted out and risked and stuff as a young woman. But I got sober when I was 23 and began very rapidly moving into my center. Yeah. And I think those kinds of abusive behaviors where people can hate men or hate women or be in cycles that are that extreme, that comes from, you know, if I had lived the last 20 years and didn't process anything. I think
well,
that
you certainly learned a lot over this period of time. Now, Bill Johnson of the Desert Journal read your book, and he said that it's a guidepost for the integration of the emotional body and the path to ascension. Now, what sort of advice do you now give people to overcome these type of experiences where they're still floundering? What does it say in your book that you feel would guide people and help them?
I think primarily it has to do with an orientation to life. Like, a lot of people come out of these injuries and they feel like it was their fault, and they feel guilty, and they feel like they have to stay secret, and they have to stay loyal to this system where the stuff came from, and they have to continue to participate with those people. And I guess on the most basic level, the first thing I would say is that it's absolutely individual. Everybody's journey to health is completely individual. And like, what one thing I have been learning more about is how unique the journey men take happens to be. What I find is that it kind of boils down to realizing that we are healthy and we're beautiful, and our reactions to dysfunction and to darkness and to shadow-ridden dynamics is healthy. But we're taught that all of our movements away from those dynamics is unhealthy. Does that make sense? It's kind of an abstract concept, but on the most basic level, and say in The Edge of the World, in that book, what I talk about there is I talk about these dynamics and how I felt when I was underneath these perceptions that my family had about me for not being willing to stay in there with them, okay? And also because I was forced to pretend like everything was okay when it really, really wasn't at all, and it still isn't. Okay, and so it's this struggle to me to get out of this subjugated state underneath the power of these people who are really ruled by this directive to perpetuate these energies. And that book talks on I'd say the main theme through there is really you get an inside view of how I extract myself from that relationship to those energies. Because the truth is, you know, I am a beautiful, healthy person. I was born that way, and I am now. And every movement I made into this seat of knowing that was in opposition to all of those people. I mean, it's a confusing thing, and I think it's a process that takes place inside of a person's psyche, and so it's very individual, I guess would be my answer. And all I can share there is my process, and I share in that book not just my personal process, but I also share my as a woman and my inner child and the relationship that I built to myself. But it's also my role as a woman and a metaphysician who's discussing these issues. And in that world, I have never had a seat either, because this is taboo, and we're supposed to talk etherically about the feminine and No, this is the, in my body of work, I carry the emotional integration component to one larger body of work. And this is what it is. This is how it sounds. This is what it feels like. This is how it manifests in this day and age, in this world. It's like, can I exist inside of this very reality, totally conscious emotionally and present for myself and not move away from myself? If I sense some kind of weird energy, can I honor that? Can I acknowledge that? Can I show up for myself inside of this? Can I walk away and from an entire family and live in destitution with no love and no support? Can I exist as a metaphysician on the level that I am here with my consciousness and never have a seat at the table because I'm discussing these taboo issues? And so that book kind of is just my own personal journey, but it's common because we all have a personal journey. How do we exist here in our divinity and feel the right to do that and deal with the opposition that tends to accompany that, especially if your empowerment has been ensnared and co-opted and you have people not wanting you in your power. Like, my family does not want me in my power because that means they're confronted, even though I do not interact with them and I'm thousands of miles away from them and have been for decades. They are absolutely threatened to the core of their soul that I even exist in this world and am having this conversation right now. And I'm aware of that, but I'm doing it anyway because I have found a way to create enough safety for myself to go forward and to exist in my totality here, because I have the right to be here too, just like they do, you know. So
yes, indeed, yeah. So can you actually say there is one way that would promote self-healing that's better than any other? Because you're mentioning that it's, I guess, very much an individual experience.
You know, that's a profound question, because I have recently had some very, deeply profound and moving conversations with a man who's processed, who's had, you know, a process that, and I have, you know, I've known for many, many years that a lot of men are, the way that they're wounded, for instance, in my matrix, you know, it was a domineering, a physically abusive male toward a female. But there is an epidemic of this stuff going on where it's mothers wounding their sons, because you have, like, say, in my age group, all the women I know went ahead and had children and didn't do their integration work. So they passed all this energy onto their male children. And what they do, it's a different dynamic, but it's kind of what I call covert incest, mother to son. And even though it's not sexual, it's like a woman can violate so deeply on these levels that men, it is not their nature to turn inward to even comprehend what the hell's taking place here. They just know they've been taken over. And their own mother did it to them, just like my father devastated me. And in my case, my mother was passive, but in a sense, she really wasn't. I mean, in fact, on the astrological level, my wound is the wound of the mother. It's what she taught me about my own power, and that I'm supposed to be powerless, and I'm supposed to stand in a powerless relationship to these energies. And that was her prime directive. And what I absorbed, that was the overall message that I got as a woman. And I know men, and so and I've wondered and contemplated for years, how will men deal with the injuries from the mother? Because I can't even begin to know. I know what I did, which was, and it's fascinating to me, because what I'm learning is that the male approach to integration of the feminine wounds to them is almost like a mirror to mine. It's an opposite. Mine was, my healing is very kind of masculine in nature. It's linear, it's analytic, it's understanding, comprehending, and doing this kind of work, where it seems like the male thing, at least what I've been seeing, is it's completely feminine. It's totally, it's about losing yourself totally to this thing so that you can somehow maintain your soul. It's a fascinating thing to me. And so I do believe it's absolutely unique and individual. And because everybody's wounds are different. I have a very close friend who had an unbelievable childhood where she was, her mother was in a fatal car accident when she was in her womb at 4 months of age. And she, so they kept her alive, these nurses, these nuns in this high-ordered convent, kept her mother on life support. This was 55 years ago, until she was born. Okay, so she has right there, this isn't like a sexual abuse trauma, but she has a trauma from her past that has to do with this premature time of her life before she was even born, where she was kept in utero, her mother was kept alive, she was born, and then at term, and her mother just died that very moment. Okay, and so that creates, in being living, for her living as a premature, undeveloped baby, under those conditions, and nobody ever processing that, and there not being active healing of that. Throughout her life, she was always alienated from that tiny part of herself who is her purest, most divine essence. Okay? So you look at a story like that and what it has taken for her to come to that and to come to embrace that child and to integrate and build a bridge back to herself so that she could exist on the ultimate levels of her own divine union with her spiritual energy in this world and go forward here. So, like, I could never know that. I can exist with her and love her and know that she's beautiful and she has the right to embrace every aspect of herself. But I think in an experience like that, you can end up rejecting yourself and not even know it, right?
I can see from what you said how individual people's experiences are. What would you say to anybody who's listening in who still has emotional problems related to some experience like that? How would you suggest they approach it if they're having problems still?
I think the primary thing is to turn back to the child you once were, that this is the journey we have to make. We have got to turn to ourselves and have compassion for the child we once were. Otherwise, you can end up becoming abusive and passing this legacy on, because there is no way to not have compassion for yourself and show up for yourself inside your own history. And if you're staying separated from yourself and blaming yourself for things that were abusively done to you, how can you turn and create a healthy world for yourself? It's impossible. And even though we have been indoctrinated in these lineages to condemn ourselves and hate ourselves, like in my family, if you showed any evidence of being devastated or hurt, you were like swiftly struck down for that and condemned and humiliated and blamed and despised as weak. And so I learned to not, through those processes, I learned to not have any compassion for myself. How can I exist for anybody else if I don't love myself? And loving ourselves is not an abstract concept to me at all. It's like, can I turn back and go back down those timelines and love myself and have compassion for how terrifying it is to be born into a family where your own mother and father are waiting there to devour and destroy you, you know?
Yes, indeed.
And to whatever degree that's true, if wherever we've experienced that and then been taught to pretend like we felt safe there when we didn't. And I know my story is sort of severe and extreme, but it's incredibly common. I would say at least 9 out of 10 people that I know moving through ordinary life are devastated.
That's amazing. I'm very pleased to say that, to the best of my knowledge, I'm one of three in the family, that there was never a single incident in the whole of our childhood lives. So
I
feel
that.
quite privileged. Now, you've clearly got a lot to offer people, and you're doing it through your book as one outlet. Do you hold sort of workshops where people can come and discuss all these things with you?
Well, I'm at a point, what's happened for me a lot with my work, it's kind of like I created that work sort of ahead of time, and I think because of my metaphysical identity and destiny that I've been sort of just always had this work and always waiting to find the way for it to go out in the world and never having really had sustenance or support or energy. It's really timing. One of the things I'm really contemplating right now is creating a foundation, because I have an enormous body of work that takes you from total self-alienation into complete integration, and not just on the child abuse levels, but metaphysically and spiritually as well. But one of the things that I really want to do is create a way for people to be able to access that that knowledge freely and in an uninhibited way. And so that's a project I really hope to be able to ground in this year ahead, if I just have enough breathing room to do it.
I think that's a wonderful ambition, Motti.
Thank you.
Well, you've been through it, you've done it, and as the expression goes, you've got the T-shirt. So who better to advise someone else in these type of problems? You've spoken of divinity, and you speak of higher consciousness and ascension. What is your understanding of ascension as such?
I feel, for me personally, that it is really about existing. So I can talk on a personal level. Mm. It's about existing in this higher state of energy that I do believe that we are. It's like in something that I wrote once. It was actually for an essay on Othello that I don't know if you're familiar with that story, but Othello went through a lot of problems because he couldn't really understand the capacity in a destructive person to cause the problems in his world that this person ultimately caused. And it was an essay I wrote about Othello, and it was called Othello and the Predicament of the Innocent or something like that. But I wrote in there, you know, as we realize that the shadow exists now in the very places our consciousness is meant to inhabit, we realize that we are mighty in our potential indeed. And I do feel like I have a number of different views into ascension. I have the work I'm doing in this world, which is work I conceived back in Atlantis, that is all about ascension. And it's called the Left Eye of Horus, but it's the emotional body and what we have to address on the level of the emotional body to be capable of dwelling and moving into these higher states of existence right here in this world. And I've always known from the time I was born that this is the life I'm completing, that body of work, that it's coming to completion, that it's for this time, and that we are moving, heading right in these very moments that you and I are sitting right now. On a collective level, I absolutely believe humanity can move into this next state of existence. You can call it Christ consciousness or whatever, but where we're actually embodying and living at the levels of our potential, which is all of that. It's transcendence, it's immortality, it's agelessness, it's magic, it's being able to manifest at will. It's moving out of these notions that we are nothing but slaves in these trap states. And there's a million things I have to say on that subject. And then it's also on the personal level. So I'm completing this body of work that's absolutely all about ascension and nothing but ascension. And then I know from my own personal experience what, you know, I'm making the personal journey of emotional integration. And having done that, it has led me to a place where I sit right now capable of embodying myself on much higher levels of self-actualization. And I also see this going on all over the world and all around me. And so that's kind of a broad overview. I believe ascension it's just a different, I think we're moving into a different level of consciousness of, about who we are. And that's where the emotional integration ties into this. Like, there's no way for me to know myself and deny my own history inside of this life. If I'm shut off from myself, how can I exist here? You see what I'm saying? There's an absolute direct correlation between the two things.
I'm totally with you as far as your understanding of ascension. I too believe that we are entering a higher state of consciousness. Now, did you at any time, since you seem to have had some understanding of spiritual concepts, did you ever feel that you had sort of unseen guides or spirit helping you when you had your problems?
Actually, I didn't, and that's scary, you know, but I felt like somehow though I do know other people who have had that, had help, and I'm sure there's been obviously some kind of protection for me, because I'm not dead, and I didn't, you know, self-destruct. And I mean, I did through the end of my drinking. I mean, I was like living on Skid Row, and I remember waking up with a knife at my throat. And you know, I mean, I went into the underworld on the ultimate levels in this life, and somehow I'm totally whole and healthy and completely alive on every level. So there must be some kind of protection. But I didn't really have that, and I don't know where I never felt, okay, there's a guide here, I'm going to be protected, and this sort of thing, because I feel like my work, and because I've been moving through eons with this body of work, I had the force of that. Like, I know what I'm doing here, and I know that I'm completing this work in this life, and I know humanity. It's kind of like from the time I was a little baby, it's like I'm returning the balance of the male-female polarities within me. It's going to manifest externally with the being who carries the other half of my work, and we're going to both move into our ascended states inside of this life, and it's completely timed into the collective shifting. And so I had that, which even though it wasn't a being or a guide, it was an absolute unwavering knowing. And that I have always carried. And so that has anchored me and kept me moving in the right direction.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, I've seen the photograph on your web of your artistic work in glass. Was that something that you took up that gave you an outlet to concentrate your mind on something else, or did you always do that?
I actually got into glass. Well, I've always been a writer, and my profession is really a metaphysician, although I've never had a way into that world in a certain way, because, like I said, because of the depth and the intensity of what I carry, and because it's the feminine part of a body of work that there's never... So, because of that, I've always been just trying to survive, and I'm an artist, and right now I live kind of in the southwest of New Mexico, and when I first came up here, I ended up kind of buying a little torch from these guys who had a little account, and I just taught myself glass, and for the first time I was able to really make a living doing a certain form of art. And there's something about glass I taught myself, and I could sell it on eBay, so I'd make these sets of beads and sell them to jewelers, and then they'd use that in their work. So I kind of did it purely for a survival thing, although I love glass, and I created thousands of beads and sold them to jewelers, and I was able to support myself for 5 years doing that, and so it was not really like everything I do. I mean, I just am sort of a generative artist, and I work in all types of mediums. But the glasswork, I feel like was a field that I got into. I became very adept, and I sort of took myself through an apprenticeship by creating all those beads. And at some point, now the next thing I want to do is make really high-end amulets and magical pieces for people in glass, but it was more a pragmatic thing that led me into glass. But I was living way out in the middle of the country here, and I was able to do that and work from home, so that was really nice. And
well,
I love glass. It's a very alchemical.
I've mentioned that you are also an astrologer, and also that you do give out free monthly astrology newsletters. That seems a totally different direction for your interests. How long have you been into astrology?
Gosh, I've been into astrology for decades. I'd say astrology was one of, out of all the tools I accessed for my integration work. It's interesting, but I was living up in the Northwest, and somebody bought me an astrology reading when I was still doing a lot of that deep processing work. And I had accessed, like I said, a lot of conventional therapy and even had soul retrieval work and this and that. But when I went to that astrology reading, it was the first time in this life I touched into that. It was, that reading was the most empowering thing to this day that anybody ever did for me in that integration process. Because astrology, there is a power in there to mirror people on the ultimate levels that are so strong and so clear that it can really back out those false mirroring energies. And so at that time I had a lot of friends who were sort of in recovery, and I turned them on to that astrologer in Seattle, and I would listen to their tapes, and astrology was like a language that I knew. It's like another language. I just knew it. And so I began to work in astrology at that time, and I work with it very specifically. It's like a psychic once said, you know, you're building a template so that only those people who need you find you. And it's true. I work with astrology just on a certain way to mirror certain people who are existing in this world, sort of like I am, from a certain capacity where you can go all your life and never have your beauty really reflected to you.
Right, luckily I'm going to have to start thinking in terms of drawing the program to an end, because we haven't got 2 minutes left.
Okay.
Where can people reach you if they want astrology readings? Where can they get your book? Perhaps you'd like to give us a bit of information, how they can get in touch with you.
Great, Michael. My website is called innerworlddesigns.com, I-N-N-E-R. WORLDDESIGNS.com, Inner World Designs. And that's my own website. And so it has everything on there. I created the site, and I've got my publishing on there and my glasswork and my astrology information. And there's my column is on there, so people are welcome to just read the column if they want to be on that little mailing thing. It's a very simple thing I send out just with the column in it once a month. So
Right. Can they get your book through your website?
Yes, my book is on there as well. And I have a PDF version on there, which is what I'm doing now, because being the artist I am, I was hand sewing and making and doing every book one at a time. So I have a PDF version on there. It's very easy to purchase and download, and the whole book is right there that way. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm going
to have to say thank you very much. You're a great talk, and it's a very interesting story because it's your life, and it's quite remarkable. Thank you very much for coming onto the program. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I did too. Thank you so much for having me. It was a privilege.
You've been very welcome. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Well, friends, that was a very interesting talk with Motti. My guest next week is someone who you're well used to by now, Sheldon Nidal, who is the outlet on the Earth for the Galactic Federation. And if you're not familiar at all, he gives out weekly messages from various member civilizations of the Galactic Federation. So I've got a whole list of good questions to ask him here. I'll send him a copy so that he can be prepared. So I'm expecting another interesting 55 minutes. So thank you for being with me today. I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all.